So hi, Will and Grimes Podcast. I'm Shane.
I'm Glory.
And we're here with
Rachel Anna Dopkin.
And we're asking some questions today about our new album, Acceptance. Congrats on that, by the way. How do you feel about the response to it so far?
It's been pretty great. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's always one of those things where I definitely built it up a little bit more in my head. I should say it this way. Like, as an artist, as I'm sure you guys know, like, you live so much in your own head, and when you're writing music and you're creating your album, you never know how it's going to be received. I think the reception has been pretty good so far. I still feel pretty close to the fire, so I don't feel like I can honestly answer that.
Fair
but,
enough.
I'm happy it's out in the world, because I mean it took about 4 years from like when we started recording to when we actually started releasing, about three and a half. So it's good that it can just be out there now. And now, as like a mother birthing a child, I need to just like let it be its thing, you know, and find its way.
Yeah. Well, for the people listening that don't know, Rachel and I, we work together. I'm one of her managers. I'm on her management team. So it's interesting to dive into this record with you, because we started working together right around, like, we just jumped right into it. Like, we met in August. Yeah. The first single came out in September. So like, I don't know anything about the process of creating this record, and that's what we're going to get into. So I'm very excited for this chat. Normally, when I talk to artists I work with, I already know everything. So this is like, this is interesting. Different perspective this time around.
Yeah, totally. You make such a good point too, because like, you and Matt really came in, you guys really transitioned with me. Like, you were sort of, there were multiple things happening at the same time, and we were kind of like, all right, well, let's get that done, and then we can figure out what the next steps will be once we get through this, because you sort of came in mid, not that the release had started, because we hadn't started putting music out, but as you know, there's so much that goes into a release on the back end, that all of those sort of pieces were already in motion. It was just a matter of like, when are we setting the date, you know? So yeah, I realized that. I'm like, Matt knows a lot more about this, the process of the record, than you do.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, because Matt had a couple of meetings with you before I was brought into the fold. So yeah, I don't know much of anything. The first time we sat down was after I saw you and Asbury, and like, I think it was that meeting where we were like, all right, we're gonna work together. And then we just jumped right into it.
Yeah. So, you know, this record in particular, I'll never do a record like this again.
Okay.
It took me, well, this is the thing. Like, I went into this record really wanting to take the approach of what music now is, which is like this single oriented bass world, right? Like, I wanted to do a rap record like you do hip hop or pop records, which is having features and working with different producers. So I came up with a list of 4 different producers to do different batches of songs with. Now, the one thing that I realized when you start doing an essentially analog acoustic, meaning like an actual drum kit rock record, you cannot take an approach of just like being on your laptop on Ableton or Logic with beats, because you end up doing like 6 records at the same time. Like, whereas we could have cut drums all in one day with one studio and one producer, I did it with like 4 different producer or 4 different engineers, and then you end up just wasting a lot of time and money. Like, it's a great learning experience, and it's great to know who you want to work with and how to flesh out your creative process. But in terms of efficiency, it wasn't the best. But I will say that, like, you know, so this record is really about like radical, I think all of life comes down to acceptance and gratitude. And there are 2 things I have to constantly remind myself, like realizing that there's actually very little in life that we have control over or that we are in control of. It's more that life is happening to us. We're not happening to it. So it's like this constant reminder of there's so many things, especially in the music industry. And you know, Shane, because like pretty much our daily conversations are like, how are we going to solve this thing that came up that we weren't expecting, but now we have to deal with? Like, you know, it really comes back to like embracing and accepting what is. And the title track in particular is about that relationship with self, of knowing like you might feel a certain way. You can't fight how you're feeling. You just have to embrace it. You might say, fuck, I really don't want to feel like shit right now. Or I really don't want to worry about this. Or I, you know, this thing that's gnawing at me. But you have to just say, all right, well, you know what? This is just the way it is. I feel this way, but I'm not going to feel this way forever. And there's comfort in finding that like voice within to then be like, okay, now I can move on. Now I can, like, I don't have to judge myself. I think the same applies with people and our relationships. So like in a nutshell, that's what the record is about. And like, I can totally go into the more like mechanical things and more of the actual process of the engineering and the decisions that were made in terms of like the tones and the drums, and because I love all that stuff too. But as a concept, the record was just honestly not even supposed to be a record. It was supposed to just be singles that I was just going to, I literally was just going to pump out like 10 singles. Mm-hmm. And because we know how this game goes, of the Spotify waterfall game. And as time went on, I ended up only really doing the whole record with two producers. Well, one of which was myself, and then two, meaning Eric Romero from the Front Bottoms and Paul Ritchie from the Parlor Mob. Mm-hmm. And Paul was really pivotal in helping me get all the little things done. Like, we actually recorded some vocals in this room. I recorded some guitar in this room. Yeah. And it was just kind of like every single song was recorded differently. But as everything started coming together, I realized there was a lot of unity in the themes of the songs, and even like just the tonalities and the structures that I was like, okay, this is a record. This makes sense as a complete body of work. So that's how we should put it together. And that really came also in mixing. I was like, I wanted to have each producer mix their own song, because I really wanted them to have, or pick the mixing engineer they wanted. But same thing, it was just like, we need one person to mix this, because there's no way this is going to all sound like one thing. Somehow it does. Mm-hmm. And
yeah.
The mixing engineer was Kyle Joseph, who's mixed all of my prior records. He did a fantastic job. Yeah. Drum Crate, but he did a great job.
And then I was reading the credits. It was Alan at West Westside that mastered the record, right?
Yeah. I love Alan. Like, I had never worked with him before, but he's done like all of the stuff with the Parlor Mob and Gods, like Paul's band. Paul was really the one who sort of guided me in the direction of where we wanted to go for that. And Alan was great. He was also like a guru and very patient. And he's the kind of mastering engineer that understands the process of, like, sometimes you hear something in mastering and you realize, like, wow, you know what? I'm really losing the bass now. Like, we have to go back and tweak this. Like, some mastering engineers just don't want to do that. They're just like, no, it's done. You know, but he was very like, well, I want you to be satisfied and happy with the result, you know. So and I was very hands on with both the mixing and every process, every part of the record. I was very hands on. So,
hell yeah.
Good. Hell yeah.
Yeah. Probably why I still feel pretty close to the fire.
But yeah,
that might be it.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
So you kind of already covered the album title, but if you want, you could go a bit more in depth with it. Is there any meaning behind that? And then in addition to that, the cover art.
Sure. Okay. So I think that, like I was saying, you know, acceptance. So I write songs. I tell people I write songs as my way of like therapy. It's essentially like journaling, right? Like, it's my way of dealing with my external reality. And I feel like a lot of times I'm never thinking when I'm actually writing a song. It's literally whatever I'm hearing that's coming out of me. Like, you know, if people are like, oh, do you want to sound like this? Or are you trying to sound like this? I'm like, no, literally it's like just what I'm hearing in the moment that flies out of me. And, you know, for me, like I was saying, I write these songs for me to cope. And acceptance is something that I have a lot of difficulty with. And I think a lot of people do. I think a lot of people in every realm of life, whether it's their jobs or their relationships, again, there's this constant need to have to feel in control. And for me, I just wrote these songs at a time in my life where I was dealing with a lot of things that I had no control over. Like, I had two relationships that ended. One was a love romantic relationship, and then was my best friend and creative partner that I was going to date. And then he kind of like totally burned the bridge, and it was very unnecessarily dramatic. That's that whole song, Cruel, Cruel, Cruel. Like, uh-huh. I mean, multiple of the love songs on the record are about him, but that song in particular was that like very like visceral drama. Like, why are you doing this? This is so stupid. But, which is funny to me, because I listened to that song lyrically. It's like so fucking absurd and dramatic, but like, that's how I felt at the moment. Like, it was just like, this sucks. Like, why are you making me feel this way? I need to get this out. So, So I think, like I said, as a whole, it's all these moments, which also a big thing that was happening was my father had cancer and was unfortunately dying through this whole process of the record, which is part of why it took so long, because it was like COVID. And then someone would get sick in the studio and I'd have to isolate for like a month, you know? Mm-hmm. And I was living with my parents at the time. So, and then my dad had like, was constantly in and out of the hospital, had to get surgeries, had to do a stem cell transplant. So it was like coming to terms with all of these things that I was just like really uncomfortable with and had to fight myself And I realized, like, there's no good in life for any of us to ever fight ourselves, right? Like, what good is that going to do? We're just going to cause more stress and angst and anxiety. So that is really like the crux of that title in a nutshell. And I think in terms of the cover art, I just wanted something like, I went out and took some photos with my friend Justin Lubernicki, who took the album art. I really wanted something that kind of was like empowering and felt like I'm here and this is me. I'm a rock girl. Like, I want to be taken seriously. And that's also why I think the theme of red and black, like maybe subconsciously, I don't know that I was consciously thinking about this. I mean, now that I'm talking about it, because I also designed the artwork. Mm-hmm. I just really wanted it to have this heavy rock feel. Like, as a woman in the music industry, people are so quick to judge you, and they are not necessarily thinking when they see like a soft, pretty girl, oh, heavy rock. I mean, maybe mm-hmm. now. So it's something that as a artist that's like being very intentional with how I present myself, I really wanted the world to know, like, I want them to pick up that record and hear it and be like, oh, wow, okay, this is like got a little bit of like Sabbath meets Blind Faith. There's a little bit of like Third Eye Blind and Jeff Buckley. There's like all of these sort of like, there's a, like the blues, there's the rock, there's the heavy rock. So I felt like that picture first and foremost, like from an expressiveness, looked that way. But then I wanted to stylize it because it was too like polished. Like the photos actually zoomed in to like 5,000%.
Jesus.
And yeah, but because of that, it had this really interesting quality where it looks like film grain. So it has the feeling of one of those like 70s rock. Like, I was looking at a lot of like Hendrix album covers, just things that were really speaking to me. And, you know, I think for me, I really want to be seen as a rock musician. Yeah. And as you know, as a woman in this industry, like, it's like, it doesn't matter what you do. Like, people are going to stereotype you. So I hate that I feel like I have to hit people over the head with things, yeah. Whether you're a male or female. I just think people in general need to be guided, but especially as a woman, because the first thing when I first started playing music, two people were like, oh, you play music? Like what? Like Taylor Swift? I'm like, why is that? What? Oh, no. Taylor. Yeah. Honestly, like, no disrespect to Taylor Swift, but I don't even fucking listen to her. I don't know any of her music.
That's completely valid. Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Someone was like, would you want to do like a Taylor Swift cover? And I'm like, what? No.
Why?
I don't blame you.
I was like, yeah. There's a lot of money in it. I'm like, okay, I get that. But like, no.
Yeah.
Why?
If I was doing it for the money, I wouldn't be a musician. Like, let's be yeah. for real right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, that's true.
1,000%. I say that all the time. I'm like, I never want to end up in a position where I'm just in a cover band. I'm like, for me, I'd rather just have a day job mm-hmm. and do my music because, you know, and that sucks because being an original artist, it's like the hardest part of this industry now. It's like, it's insane to me how many tribute bands will sell out a place like Count Basie, mm-hmm. but like you can't get an original act in there who isn't like on a nationally headlining touring circuit.
It's,
you know,
it's dumb anyway. Because even now Starland is starting to book those acts because there's money in it. They're like the fucking like House of Independence and Asbury yeah. Lanes have been doing dance parties forever. Yeah. And now Starland's starting to do it because there's so much money in it. It's like, why fill the calendar with that shit when you could fill it with actual bands and like actually take a chance on a band instead of doing the safe thing.
Yeah. Well, and even now in the rock industry, I think that it's sad. I really don't want to think that rock is a dying art because I just think it's so important. And I think people will always love and listen to rock music, but like, man, like the machine is really pushing for pop and hip hop as just like the thing making money. Like, I just, it's so, like, I can only imagine being, a lot of my favorite bands are from, like, the 60s and 70s. That's what I grew up, like, really, really cutting my teeth and loving. And I just can't imagine, like, it being alive at that time and being able to be, like, that was pop music, you know?
Yeah.
And now it's just, that's just not how it is.
Or nowadays, it's all country. All the rage is country. My brother sits at the dinner table and talks about Morgan Wallen. I'm like, why?
Oh.
Why the fuck are you listening to that? He's like, someone put me on to it. Well, tell him to put you off that. Like, yeah, let me show you real music, bro. Like,
I still don't know who Noah Kahan is. Like,
season of the Sticks.
Yeah, my girlfriend's a huge fan of him, and wants to see him, and I'm just like, I don't know. Like, you played me his music in the car. Like, it's fine. I don't get it though.
I like the Stick song. I'll give him that. I've heard it once, and it's only been like covers, to be fair. But it's like, I like the lyrics out. I think it's well, not cute. It's a sad song, but I think it's it's a good one. It's one of the better mainstream.
I'll have to check it out. I'm sure he's great. I mean, like, this is the thing. It's amazing to me because, like, there's just so much amazing music now that is not mainstream. Like, I'm like, wow. Like, I listen to so many of my friends' bands play, and I'm just like, I was having a conversation yesterday with someone who was just like, oh, you just need to make your focus, like, making extraordinary art. And I'm like, I get that. That is definitely the baseline, but it's like, that is not going to pay your bills. That's not, like, sure, there's that, and then there's everything else that's going to put you in a position where people can even hear it. Like, what is that? And that's so subjective anyway.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I know so many bands that will never be famous that are way better than like 90% of the stuff that I hear now.
That's fair.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Not to go down that road, but yeah.
No, I mean, I get it. Like, you know, as much as, you know, we interview all sorts of people, but there's so many people we have on here that it is like, this band's so fucking cool, but nobody knows about them. Like, it's all the fucking time. That's just the way it is. There's only so many popular bands. Like, it's fucking terrible. But
and it's so much of it really is money. Like, you know, again, it was a conversation I was having with somebody yesterday about, like, first of all, having the machine behind you, and if you have money, because you can just pour it into. I mean, these big labels, again, like Shane, I know you know this because we talk about this, but like, these massive labels that are breaking pop artists are like, they have like $1 million per song to break an artist on Meta ads and Spotify pushes. It's like, as an independent artist or a DIY artist, like, you can't compete with that. That's like apples and oranges. It shouldn't be that way, but I don't know. And so, you know, I think just making sure you're making great art definitely is something you're proud of, is, I guess, the most important, because at least, you know, you're doing something that you're proud of.
Yes.
Yeah.
So can you tell us a little bit about your writing process for this album?
Sure. Okay. Yeah. So like I was saying before, you know, when I go into writing, I don't really have a goal in mind. A lot of times what happens is I'm just constantly hearing music in my head. Like, when I tell you, I have like thousands of voice memos, like, I will show you. Let's see. I mean, all the numbers are jumbled, but like, this is like,
oh, wow.
Song ideas, rehearsals. Wow.
Yeah.
Just like,
keeps going.
Oh, yeah. It's still going. Like, I think last I checked, I have like 1,000. Yeah. Look at that number.
Jesus Christ.
1,452.
Oh, wow.
I would say 80% of that, too, are song ideas. Like, I have. So when I start hearing something, it usually means like I'm feeling a certain way and then I have something to say. So I'll continue hearing something. And a lot of times it'll just be gnawing at me. Like, I'll hear it in the shower. I'll hear it running. I'll just be driving. And then I'm like, okay, I do one of two things. Immediately I will record it. I'm like, that's super catchy. I don't want to forget it. And then if it keeps coming back to me too, I know, all right, I got to sit with this, figure out what I'm singing. Let's put some chords behind it. And then maybe some lyrics will come. And sometimes, like, it just happens. Like, that is usually how it starts for me. And, like, I it's amazing because I always, there are moments in my life where I'm like, what if I run out of material? But, like, I never run out of material because I'm, like, always fucking feeling things. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, hey, I don't feel great right now, but I hear this melody. Or, like, oh, I'm processing this thing. Now I have something to say. So with this record in particular, like I had mentioned, I was sort of going through a bunch of things and things were just coming to me. Like, Cruel, Cruel, Cruel was a song that came to me in 20 minutes in the shower. Like,
wow,
that hook. Cruel, 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 the way you love to disappoint me. Like, that was the first thing that came to me. And then I was like, whoa, this is fucking catchy. What is that? And then the rest of the song, like, I had a whole verse and a whole chorus, and that song was written in like 20 minutes. And then other songs like Tomorrow. It's interesting because the song Goes South, which is the solo guitar track, which I really love that song. And then there was another song called So Overwhelmed by Emotions that was supposed to be on the record, but we actually haven't recorded it yet. And Tomorrow's Another Day, those three songs, all of which are very different, came to me in one, like all in 1 hour, one night at like 3 in the morning. Wow. Like I couldn't sleep and I just was like really fucked up and in my head. And I was like, oh my God, I don't know what I'm going to do. And I just like, was like, let me just grab my guitar. Like maybe something will come out. And Shit Goes South, it was called Shit Goes South, but I changed the title to Go South because it's more PG.
Yeah.
But I kind of wish it was still Shit Goes South. That song, it was like, that was one of those songs that I literally put my phone down. I hit record with the guitar and the vocals and the lyrics. Whole thing just came out. I was like, I'm not changing this. I don't even know what this is. Like I would have to sit down and tell you what chords I'm playing because I just don't know. There's like certain parts where I'm doing finger picking and inversions and I'm like, I could figure it out, but yeah. I just let my ear follow it, you know? Like
yeah.
And then Tomorrow's Another Day. It's like crazy that those songs came at the same time. And then almost immediately after, I will hear the groove. Like as a drummer, and this is something that I think is really to my benefit as a songwriting drummer, is that I almost like the two are almost like completely like intertwined. Like I hear a song and within, even if I don't have lyrics, I'll be like, oh yeah, this is what the groove's going to be. This is the groove. So then I'll go in eventually once the structure's done and I will lay down drums, even just mm-hmm. for myself practice wise. And then, So then kind of like lyrics come and like a lot of times the structures of the songs will come first and then I have to sit down and come up with lyrics, or like I will hear a melody and a lyric and I'll say, oh, okay, let's start there. And then the concept kind of builds. So mm-hmm. yeah.
Gotcha.
I think all that right. answers.
Yeah, that answers
hell yeah,
it.
Yeah, that answers it. So what song off the album took longest to write and which one is your personal favorite?
Oh man, which one took longest to write? Well, I think Just a Dream took the longest to write in terms of lyrics. Again, it's one of those things where I'm like, I don't even know how that song is like 7 songs in 1, but somehow it works. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which is also funny to me because I was like, I thought for sure that song was going to be the hardest to market. Mm-hmm. And it's like crazy to me. Like we got the Spotify playlist on that song.
Yeah.
Like we weren't even really trying, you know?
And it came two months after the song came out.
Right. Right. And now still too, I'm really curious to know as the summer progresses and we start playing shows and I get back on the horse with the posting, it's like, where's this, what are people going to really resonate with and love? I mean, obviously Cruel, Cruel, Cruel was like immediately like people were into that, but mm-hmm. Just a Dream probably took me the longest to write lyrics. I came up with the structure. I don't even remember how long that was. Acceptance is my favorite track. As a song to complete, that took the longest because that was the hardest song to mix. Oh. Which is ironic because the rough mix that we did, the first version that Paul did, because we pretty much cut that song live in the studio. I played drums and Dan Haas played bass. We had Paul and Eric from the Parlor Mob playing guitar. And then I did my guitar after. And I even cut scratch vocals that day. Like we got the live take. It was amazing. We were all on a high. And Paul, as a really good producer, could tell I was like in a really good headspace and that I was feeling really confident. He's like, I want you to get in the vocal booth and sing. And I had never done that before, where like I was singing and there were like 7 people, you know, in the control room, like listening. Cause it was all my bandmates. Yeah. And there was one of the studio engineer were there. And usually when I sing, like I really need privacy. Like it's a really personal thing where it's like, it's so easy to get in your head. That was actually the hardest thing on this record, were to sing these songs. But I sang most of that take, most of the take that's on the track is just the scratch vocal that we got that day. And it is like really a testament to the power of just like when you're present and you're creating and you're in a flow state and you're not thinking, that is where you get your best art, like 100%.
Absolutely.
But that song is my favorite because it really is a thing that I feel really strongly. People love hearing that song the most when we play it live. And it really is like what I feel like is the most important journey we have in life, which is our relationship with ourselves. Like, and I'm constantly like, again, it's like the whole story is like, you're kind of like looking everywhere else for approval, for you're running around like a chicken with your head cut off. You're like, what do I do? You're trying to make all these decisions, whether it's like friendships, relationships, you know, your business, your work. You're just kind of like out here in the world, which is how so many people are existing now, because we don't really have time to think. We just have to do. Mm-hmm. And then you realize like, wait a minute, I don't really need anybody else's input, including the world's. Like, I have all the answers inside here. And if I just kind of take that moment to tune in, I'll find that. So that's the song that I feel the strongest about. And I think, and it ironically, it was the hardest to finish. And all my bandmates were like, Rachel, fucking life imitate art. Can you please just accept it? Like, done.
Yeah.
That was the whole joke. Oh. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That that song is one of my favorites off the record. That and Cruel are my favorites. But something about hearing Acceptance live, like especially at your release show, there's just so much power like in that performance. There's just so much power in that song in general, but like in the performance as well.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, you know, and I really love playing. I love playing guitar and drums on that song, but I think I feel so strongly about that when I play it live, it doesn't get old. Like some of the other songs, like Mentu's a bop. People have fun. I think that song's so fucking corny, but like everybody loves it. It's a catchy song, but it's like, you know, it's about like my ex that I broke up with in 2019. Like it's so not relevant to my life. Mm-hmm. That you know, and even like the love songs, like a lot of times I write songs and it's how I feel in the moment, but like, you know how it is, time passes, you get over it. Sometimes you need to write the song to get over it, and then it's hard for me to put myself back in that space. But acceptance is a thing that I literally live every day, to the point where I actually said, and I still need to do this, I told the guys, I said, when I finish this record and put it out, I'm going to get a tattoo of the word acceptance on my body. somewhere where I can look and like, I want to get it like here or here, where like I can look in the mirror every day, because I'm constantly fighting with myself and be like, Rachel.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So I think that is a testament too of what you're saying, Shane, because as a performer, when I'm singing it, like I really believe it, you know, and that's the whole thing about performing, which is, you know, getting into that place and being able to hone in on that's like what it's all about. So yeah, thank you for saying that. That's cool.
Of course. So how'd the tracklist for the album come about? Did you write the opener of the opener, close to be a closer, shuffle around and see what fits? What was that process like?
I think same thing, you know, as time was going by and we were deciding, or I was deciding like, okay, this is like a complete body of work. That was just the flow that made sense. Like I also really love Tomorrow's Another Day. That's a song too that really resonates with me. That song is the last track, and I realize on Spotify you don't get this, but on the vinyl, or if you're listening on a CD, the reprise is a hidden track. Like I wanted to give an ode to some of those like 70s rock records where there would be like a fade out ending and a fade back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And when we recorded that, which we recorded the drums, we actually recorded like pretty much it ended up, we had to recut a bunch of stuff, but we recorded it with Christopher Thorne from Blind Melon and Joshua Tree. And the drums, like we kind of were like, let's just like, just jam this out. Like, we don't know how long we're going to make this ending. And then when I got back to New Jersey, we recut some things, we sped some things up. But I knew that song was to be the ender, because, or the closer, I should say, because it is really like, it feels like a closer. That song is I wrote that song is a pretty much about suicide. I mean, in a nutshell, it's like this feeling like you really don't want to keep going, and you are just like, fuck this, I don't want to do this anymore, I don't want to live anymore, like I don't want to have to deal with all of this like minutia and overwhelming feelings and emotions, and but you, there's something inside of you that's like, no, you know what, like I have to pick myself up from my bootstraps and just like fucking keep going. Yeah. And then you tell yourself, well, tomorrow's another day, like it's an opportunity always to start over. So I felt like that as a concept, those like the underlying tones are about suicide. If you really listen to lyrics, you'll get that. And it's about like facing your fears of death and dying and all that. But most people like on the surface will probably just see it as like, oh yeah, this is about like, it's supposed to be uplifting. I guess I told myself that to help myself because I wasn't feeling that way.
Yeah.
But it's like a starting over. So I felt like, okay, this is a good place to end this record because it gives people this feeling of like, okay, we're closing this chapter. We're closing these feelings and we're going to move on to something else. Mm-hmm. So yeah, and everything else just kind of was like, I just felt like fit as a flow. Yeah, like
based on vibes.
Yeah, just based on vibes and on themes and on the stories, which again, as a total is about like coming to terms with a lot of things in reality. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I didn't really think about it until I had everything as a whole and once I laid it all out, I didn't change it. I was like, this makes sense. I like this. I don't need to overthink this.
Good. Hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
So would you be able to tell us where your headspace is at while you're creating this album?
Well, two different things. Writing is one thing. Uh-huh. And actually being in the studio, cutting tracks, thinking about tones, right? It's kind of like twofold. And then there, if you want to say threefold, three is like the release because the release is a whole different process. But
yeah.
So obviously like the first state, like when I'm in a writing flow state, I don't like to put like any sort of conditions or boundaries on myself. I kind of just like to allow whatever is to come out of me or be to be. Now, if I have to finish things because I have deadlines, it's a different story. And sometimes like, you know, I'm getting to a point now as an artist and knowing that I have already a whole new batch of songs I'm working on, like, yeah, there's a timeline and there's a definite, like, I want to get this finished so we can keep putting out content, put out work, put out music, because that's really important. And that's just important in art in general. Like I was talking to someone about Rick Rubin last night, and that's the thing he says is like, you just don't get attached to the work. Just keep going. Just keep making art. And then you don't have to be disappointed, right? If something doesn't, just let it be, like put it out there, plant the seed and put it out there. So
yeah.
When I'm in a creative space, which is where I like to be the most, I'm really just allowing things to be. I'm just kind of like not really overthinking. I'm not really, sometimes when I'm in a heavy writing phase, I don't even like to listen to music at all because I don't want to be like, oh, I heard this White Reaper song 7 times. Let me, all of a sudden I'm writing their riff in my song, you know?
Yeah.
So like I will have a tendency to like, if I'm deep in a writing or I have to finish songs, I won't listen to anything. I'll just like listen to meditation tapes or podcasts, which I like to do regardless to sort of like reset. But, when I'm actually cutting the record, which also I should say is part two of my favorite part of, because that is still part of the creative process. I like getting really lost in the world of the studio. I love, you know, like working on tones and textures, like, oh, we really like this snare drum. Like I have like a playlist of probably 200 songs that I used as like a influential playlist for this record. Like I was very like, listening to a lot of like, you know, I mean, I mentioned White Reaper, but there's this band. Do you guys know the band American Trappist? They're out of Philly.
No,
I don't think so.
Oh, I should connect you with, I will totally connect you. So, those guys are actually from Tom's River originally. And they used to be the River City Extension. If you, I don't know that you're probably too young, Shane, but
yeah.
Yeah. Like Joe Michelini is like one of my favorite artists ever. Like he came out with this record in 2020, like that I literally listened to that and Dogs, or sorry, and Animals by Pink Floyd and the Parlor Mob. That was like all I was listening to while I was making this record. Mm-hmm. But like his whole record, like the sonic references of the drums and the guitar tones, and then like Raylan Baxter, that was actually a really big influence on this. I was listening to a lot of his stuff. Ty Siegel, White Reaper. I always throw in like my big influences, which is like Jeff Buckley is always bar none a huge influence of mine. And then like Incubus is always a big influence. And like, I know they kind of are all over the place, but there are certain things that they do both in terms of just like their melodic structures of things and like their tones that I've always really loved. Actually, when we were mixing at one point, we put on A Curl After the Murder because that song, that record is just like mixed beautifully. Mm-hmm. And my mixing engineer was like, yo, this is actually a really good reference for this record. Like, and I mean, there's certain things that sound like very 2005 on that record because it was made in 2005. But anyway, we don't need to go down that rabbit hole. But I love Incubus. So yeah, so like being able to get lost in a world with, like, I did that with Eric Romero and Paul, where, you know, Eric especially was like, we were very intentional with like, okay, like Bed You Made, for instance, like we use like a very thick, heavy, like thick meaning actually like long snare drum versus like a skinny one, which gave it that like really sort of deep sound. White Denim, that's another band I love that I was referencing a lot. And that was a reference for the drums on Cruel. So when I'm in the studio, it's my favorite place to be. I don't like being out in the real world, like thinking about this.
Yeah.
Or like, you know, as an artist, like we're all so fucking sensitive. And like my biggest strength and my biggest downfall, like it's both a blessing and a curse, is that like I'm super sensitive. And if I'm not like super focused, like I will be allowing the noise of the outside world to affect me and take me down. Yeah. And that is like a constant battle for me of like, I mean, you know, Shane, because we talk about this, and this is like, I need to get stuff done. And some days I'm so distracted by like, oh, what does this person think about me? Or this person's getting ahead. Like social media for me breeds so much FOMO that it's like damaging. And I think like, but if you can just also just, I think a lot of artists and people struggle with that, but if you can just step away and like throw yourself into your art, you know, that's the best place to be. So when I'm in the studio, I'm trying to just be super present. Mm-hmm. I'm super excited. Like, it gets to a point where like I start overcooking things, and that's a dangerous place to be.
Yeah.
And that definitely happened on this record, but like, you know, I pushed through that, and it was part of why, I mean, you weren't on my team yet, Shane, but if you were talking to me in 2022, which is, I had countless conversations with Paul where he was like, you know, and I was trying to find, we were trying to pitch it, see what we could get. And it was constantly like, he's like, you got to just like put this out. You can't like keep thinking like, you got to just like, you made the art, be proud of it and put it out, you know? So I think like, yeah, I mean, and I think that's like so truth, any art, right? Like it's so easy to get to a point where you can just start over painting.
Yeah.
On a record, and, on a mixes.
And didn't you come into the office at one point with Christian in 2022 or early 2023? And we didn't meet at that time because you went right into the studio. But I remember Matt being like, she's like, it just keeps, it's in this constant state of like, it's got to find its home, and it's not finding, right. Like, it's just not out there yet. She's been sitting on this forever.
Yeah, well, exactly. I did. I came in 2022 and I went to the studio and I played, you know, I had somebody mix it, and then I had a couple things happen, and then we had to redo it. But like, I wasn't done. I think I only had one or two mixes then, and I was asking the opinions. But that's another thing too. Like when you start asking so many opinions, like you just, at some point you don't, like for me, same thing, like other people might be really strong in their convictions, and it's really weird. I am in some ways, but I'm very open to input and to hearing what other people have to think, to a fault where I'll take it and I'll be like, wait a minute, is that right? Or is this right? You know? And it's like,
yeah,
there are 100 million different answers. You just have to go with one. And especially when it comes to art and making decisions of like, yo, what do I want? But that's why ultimately the mixing was difficult, and I was very in the weeds with it. I was also playing in Low Cut Connie then. So another thing, I was touring with that band, and then when I was coming home, I was mixing and then listening to mixes on the road and then coming home. That was like summer of 22. But yeah, and I think I had to take a lot of steps away. I had to take a lot of breaks too when I was mixing. Like I was like, yo, I can't fucking listen to any of these songs for a month. Like, I'm sorry. Like, it's just, and that was something Alan said too. Alan was like, it's really good for artists before they give a mastering engineer their finals, give yourself like at least a week, maybe two, without listening at all.
Yeah,
so that you can come back with fresh ears. And I honestly, like this whole release cycle, Shane, like I wasn't listening to the record at all. Like,
I don't blame you.
Yeah, I was just like, nope, like it's done. And then like I finally listened when it came out, even the singles, like I listen now and it'll come up on my car, or like I was at my friend's house and we listened to the vinyl and I'm like, this sounds really good. Like, I'm glad that I like made the decisions I made, because they were difficult at times, and there's definitely things that like you can't hear certain things, but I was like, ultimately I wanted it to have like balls, for lack of a better term. Like, I wanted the record to fucking rock.
Yeah.
And like, it's loud and the guitars are really loud. Sometimes I feel like the bass could have been louder, but I'm like, everything is sitting in an exciting place where I'm like, yeah, fuck yeah. Good enough.
Fuck yeah. Hell yeah.
Yeah, right.
The vinyl wound up sounding really good.
Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, also my friend Chris is like state of the art, like the best vinyl sounding like system that I know. Like, he's a vinyl freak, but it's honestly like, it sounded, in my opinion, it sounds better than streaming, which makes sense because streaming is way compressed, but streaming still sounds good too. But no, it sounded really good. I was very happy with it.
Good. Good.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
So this one should be super, super quick off the top of your head. I want you to describe this album for new listeners in three words. No more, no less.
Heavy. Okay. I was going to say deep, but heavy could also be like, I'm thinking heavy in terms of both the context and like the content, I mean, and the context of the content and also the sound. Psychedelic.
Okay.
Okay.
And I, this is like kind of lame, but I would just say rock, because it's a rock record.
Yeah.
And I see like heavy and psychedelic are like a little bit more like esoteric, like people can sort of take that and run with it, but rock is like pretty literal.
Yeah. It's on the nose.
I feel like it's a lame answer, but like, I don't know. That's what I'm going with right now. So
I mean, like, you could get really elaborate with it and give us these big words that I need a dictionary for, but like, straight to the point is the best way to answer it. You know, whatever comes to mind first, that's the point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, like, you know what? I listen to a lot of heavy rock music and I want people to know, like, it's so funny because I feel like, and it's so funny, like people come along and they're like, if I was producing you, and I'm like, I didn't ask you, but thanks.
Your opinion. Shut up.
Yeah. I know. And everyone's got an opinion. And I shouldn't say that in a negative way, but it's like so many people be like, oh yeah, like if I was producing you, like, you know, you should really focus on this and you should really focus on that. And like, you should really do like someone was telling me the other day to like lean more into like the Maggie Rogers thing. And I'm like, no, they're every female artist now. And no, if I was doing a smart thing, I'd probably be doing like the Amy Winehouse thing, like the more Lake Street Dive thing, but I do some of that in my music. To me, that's more interesting. Like, let me take those influences, because I do also love jazz and soul music. Those are two huge influences in my life, but like, let me apply it in more of a Black Sabbath context. But also, like, Ozzy Osbourne has like one of the most beautiful, incredible voices in rock ever. And like, that is exciting to me. Like, you could take any of that and add a different context to it, and it's powerful and raw, and that's what I like about all that music. So yeah,
absolutely. Hell yeah. So can you talk about any particularly challenging or standout moments from the creation of this album, positive or negative?
Well, I think I kind of hit on a bunch of them, but I think like for me, while I was in it, and now that the record's out and I've had my moments, like honestly this last month, which I like crashed like after those shows, we had a 4-string of shows, release show. I got really sick and I just came out of it, like honestly, like a couple of days ago. But there's also the emotional crash of everything like hitting you and being like, wow, like I put all this time in and like, hopefully it's like
just
good
out there now.
Like, right. Right. And it's a good and a bad thing. And I'm happy because I'm like coming to terms with like, I just want it to keep getting out there and people hearing it. When I was doing this and trying to even figure out a release plan, that was the most challenging part, like trying to wrap up the mixes and the masters while I'm watching my other friends put out music. This is really like 22 into 23. Like I said, because I kind of did the record piecemeal and I was dealing with, you know, my dad and COVID, things were just not, they were not, it was none of this record getting anything done was honestly easy. Like all of it felt like a challenge. Yeah. Like, it was like, fuck, this is not what I want to say. Like, oh, these vocals don't sound great. I need to re-sing this. Like, you know, like there were certain songs. I mean, we actually recut Acceptance. I haven't even mentioned that. Like we started in 2020 doing Acceptance.
Yeah.
And I was doing everything. So it's kind of like my process for cutting records, by the way, is I will come in, I'll lay down scratch guitar and vocals. We know exactly like the tempo and the groove. And then Dan and I will cut bass and drums live to the scratch guitar and vocals. So it has a live feel, but it's so that I can, you know, play a lot of the instruments. And then I will lay down my guitar, and then I'll lay down my vocals. I'll lay down my lead guitar, and I'll have whoever else is playing, if they're going to play. Eric played on some, Eric Rudick. And then I had obviously Roger Stevens, and I had Clint Manchin play sax. And so then getting all those parts together. But like, yeah, Acceptance was one of those songs where started, cut scratch guitar, then we did bass and drums. And it was 2020, like February 20, I think it was like 25th, 2020 is when we started that song.
Shit.
So if you can imagine what then happened, like 3 weeks later.
Yeah.
So then we were about to get in and do drums, and Paul's like, hey, we're shutting down. I don't know till when. And then it wasn't until June. And actually, at one point, it was possible that Mike McCready was going to play guitar on that song.
Oh, wow.
This is something that I haven't even told anybody on in interview. And it didn't work out. Like, you know, COVID happened, and like everybody just scattered. It was like, what's, you know, I didn't. And at one point, like, because I had played with Mike at See Here Now in 2019, he had like his side project, and he really loved my original music. And he was like, when you have new music, let me, I would love to hear it. And he had offered to play. So we were waiting for like 5 months to see if he would play the solo on that song. Oh. And then it was like, you know what, let's just keep moving. We started working on Just a Dream. And then we had Eric come in and do some guitar on Acceptance, but I pretty much played everything. And then he did the solo. And then Paul and I went to mix it. And we're like, this is just not hitting the way this song needs to hit. Mm-hmm. And I played him a live version, and he's like, Rachel, I think we need to recut this live. And I thought about it, and I was like, we've put so much time into this song. I have most of my film footage that I have is like us in the studio, like working out parts on that song.
Yeah.
And then I was like, fuck it. We have to recut this live. So we got in April of 2021, which is a day. And I remember I was like so nervous because, you know, like I've been watching The Parlor Mob and What About Frank since I was like 13. Like Paul is like one of my mentors now, but he's one of my idols guitar wise and songwriting wise. And then at that point, Eric had just started playing with us, then started playing in my band. But and yeah, we were like, and I said to the guys, I was like, listen, we're going to recut this live. We need to do a jam. Like we need to do something. Like a Black Sabbath kind of Blind Faith, like let's just do something like an ode to all of our favorite 70s bands and do a jam. Thin Lizzy, that's another one of my favorite bands, which I didn't get to mention. Like Thin Lizzy and Pink Floyd, those two are two of my favorites. So
yeah.
So we just were like, I said, let's take the riff, because that song started with that riff. That's where that song started. And I have voice memos of me playing it on the piano. I should fucking put that on social media.
You anyway. Should.
You should.
Yeah. Anyway. Sorry, you guys are just getting my inner dialogue. I'm talking so
no,
much.
You're all good. Like,
so I said, let's take this riff and let's deconstruct it. And then Eric's like, well, why don't we start with the da-na-na-na-na-na, which is the end of that section. And then we tried some things out. And then we were like, all right, let's pass around a solo. And then we did the sort of like in jazz they call it the trading fours, which is like when there'll be like a form and then the drums take a solo. So then we did that section, and then we tried it like once or twice, and then Matt was there filming us, and then the third take we got it like completely unedited, not to a click. I was on pins and needles. I was like, yo, Rachel, don't fuck this up. Like you gotta, like the night before we were rehearsing, and Paul was like, you want to play with us? You better hit the fucking drums like a caveman, Rachel. Like, come on, let's do it. Like he really, and out of nothing but love, like he is an amazing producer, because like he knows how to push the artist and he knows what you're capable of. And every step of the way on this record, he was like, no, you're going to play the lead because I know you can. And you wrote this part. I want you playing it. I'm not going to play it. Like that's, so it's like, I really like that's what makes a great like collaborative experience. But yeah, I mean, we had a lot of, I hit a lot of roadblocks. And then when we got to mixing, it just wasn't done. It just took months. It probably took like 7 months to mix this record.
Hands.
Yeah. And it is because I was like touring with another band, and I had, and it like, I think this is part of a bigger dialogue, which is like something we talk about all the time, Matt and Shane, which we talk about, which is like, what it means to be a DIY independent artist in 2024, 2022, 2023, when you don't have a team of seven behind you, you know, like, and like, you know how it is. It's like some days I'm like, I gotta work. Like after we're done with this, I gotta get back to work because like, I need to work my day job. Yeah. Like you guys know, same with you guys. It's just like, that's like the nature of the beast now. It's like having to multitask. And it's the same thing. Like I just really wanted to set a release date, but all summer long, I was touring and playing shows, and it was like I had to take the time the last 6 months to really focus on my content and focus on. And now I'm gonna. Now I want to get back to like, okay, now we're regrouping. The record's out. We're figuring out the shows for the next couple of months. But also, I have to sit and take the time to be like, okay, what is posting for the next couple of weeks look like? How can I organize that? Like all these things that as an artist now you need to think about. So, once again. Comes in the acceptance mantra of like, what is actually reality? Like we can fight it all we want and be like, fuck, oh my God, I can't believe it's taking me so long to put this record out. And that's what my dialogue was like for like months. And then it was just like, Rachel, this is just what it is. Like you got to roll with the punches, girl. Same thing. Like sure. In an ideal world, I would have had tour booked. I would have figured all that shit out, you know, but that's not where I'm at as an artist. Like it was more important for us to put out the record so that we can now get the shows and continue to, it's this whole like chicken versus egg, but you're just like, if you just sit on your art and you never put it out, you're not going to move the needle at all.
Yeah. And
you know,
and it like trying to put the record out and book it all the same time when you've got yourself and two managers working on it. And it's just like there's so many moving parts, and it's impossible to keep up with all of it. It's like you really have to, as we're doing right now, shifting that headspace into what does the promotion of the record look like, both on social media and in the live world.
Right. And that I think is like that's the key to like not getting caught in the weeds with all that. Like that's like that was like such a helpful thing. Like what Matt said to me one time, he's like, you have to remember where you're at as an artist. You can't compare yourself to an artist that has a team of seven and the fucking $1 million budget. Yeah. That's just not where you're at, you know? And that there's like comfort in that. And it really is. It's just like anything else in life where you're like, I think that's also what acceptance is about. It's just about being like authentic and real and like being really honest with yourself, like in everything in life. Like that's what we have to do. And unfortunately, like social media and things have gotten us so far away from like what is actually true. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, there's definite truth to this and it's great, but if you can't like take the time to like be in the real world with the people around you that you love, your relationships and your friends and your bandmates, and be like, wait, what's actually happening? Who am I and where am I? I'm not in here. I don't have to worry about the person that's playing 17 festivals right now, because like that's not where I'm at. Mm-hmm. You know, doing other things. I mean, inevitably the nature of being an artist is you're always comparing, but I think everybody now compares their fucking lives because of all of what we're subjected to on social media. I don't know. Do you guys struggle with that? Here, I'm just going to interview now.
Oh, like comparing myself to like other people I see on social media in general, or other people in the music industry that I'm seeing,
Both. Like, are you like from both a personal and a professional standpoint? Like, is it something that like you catch yourself being like, oh yeah, I really shouldn't do that?
Personal, probably not, because I feel like the way I was raised was always just kind of like just worry about yourself. Other people have other situations that they're working with. Yeah. And that's just always kind of stuck with me. Not saying that it doesn't, it still filters through. So it's like whether it's in my subconscious or not, mm-hmm. it's still going to be in the background. But I don't think it ever gets to the point where it breaks me down or I take it out on myself. Professionally, like in the music industry and comparing myself to other publications, probably not as much anymore. When we were smaller, yes, I was very self-deprecating, I guess, where it's just like, fuck, we aren't doing enough, when it's like we were doing like 10 interviews a fucking day. Now I think because we're getting to a point where we're doing good, we're working at a good level. I don't think so, not anymore, at least for me. I don't know, it might be different for Shane, But that's my perspective.
No, the only thing I'm a head case about is the mean comments. Other than that,
I take care of.
Yes, Gloria has to filter through the comments. I can't. Yeah. But like in terms of, you know, from the outside looking in, looking at other people on social media, I think I've found a good balance. It never really bothered me personally, at least like as I've grown, you know, when I was 13, starting out on social media and going to school at the same time, like... It totally different beast, like in my head all the time, like it was not good. But now that I'm out of school, I'm in the real world, I'm doing my thing, I'm not around these people every day, like it doesn't bother me what they're posting on social media, because I know that I'm content with what I'm doing. Like I try not to post too much personal stuff. My Instagram account is basically a fan page for my girlfriend. That's about all I post.
It's just you.
Yeah, that's all that makes the feed. Professionally, it's kind of the same thing as Glory. Like starting out, I was very in my own head, very like could be doing better. But now I'm happy with the balance that I have between the podcast and also my day job and everything in between. I think I finally struck a good balance after doing this for 4.5 years, almost 5 years now. I think I finally struck a good work-life balance where I'm able to balance everything as best as I can.
Yeah, I think that, and it is weird when, like, for me, and I think about this a lot because I deal with it, and I've been struggling with it a lot lately. It's just like, it's hard when you are the actual product. Mm-hmm. And there's like, you know, it's not even like I'm in a band where I have like three other people that I can just be like, I mean, I have my bandmates, but it's me.
Yeah.
And even like in a situation right now where like we're having to find a new bass player, it's like you are, I mean, even when you're in a band, there's still people that come and go. So it's like, you know, it's all the same. But yeah, I mean, and I guess that's just my sentiment. Like I just have the kind of personality that like I've always been so sensitive. That's just like, it's my greatest strength and it's like my biggest downfall. Like I'll just, some days I'll just be like, and I think it's also because I do want to do so much. Mm-hmm. and I see and I get hungry and eager and excited, but then there's this feeling, and I felt, you know, I was feeling this a lot more before like I had you and Matt, Shane, because like obviously too, when you're like an artist and you're kind of like, where do I go? How do I find my team? And now that we're building a team, you know, it definitely helps us like to mitigate some of those thoughts. And of course for other reasons, but for me, yeah, I just don't know what it is. It's just a thing that's like, I have to constantly keep myself in check. And that's why for me personally, it's not healthy for me to be on social media all the time, because I do take things really personally. And then that like very much so affects me. So it's like trying to find that balance where it's just not sort of gnawing at me, but I don't know. It's hard. I'm also just so laser focused, and I have been doing this for so long that I'm just like, I have certain expectations in myself, and that when I don't meet them, I can be pretty hard on myself. But trying to not do that, because it's not productive. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's all these things that I think a lot of us struggle with, and a lot of artists struggle with, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So
for this question, I want you to picture you're on tour. You're at a gas station for a rest stop. You're going in. What is your snack of choice?
Oh God, these are such good questions.
Thank you.
All right. Well, if I'm being like healthy, because I am kind of like a health nut when I'm very, very conscientious of what I put in my body. I'm always like a trail mix banana girl. Like that just like, that is like, and also like when you're gigging, when you're singing, like especially I can't like eat a meal before I sing. Mm-hmm. Like it has to be hours before I sing. So like that's always my go-to, like chips and hummus too. Like, and that's like what I'll put on the rider. But always the trail mix or like the Clif Bars and the bananas. But like if I'm going like junk food, like I love combos.
Okay.
That's
ooh,
like
combos.
Like if it's the late night drive back, like it's mm-hmm. like the combos and something sweet, like maybe like some, like I got Twizzler pull and peels the other day and I was like, man, I haven't had these in so long.
Yeah,
it depends, salty or sweet. And then like a vitamin water.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Those are dangerous.
I mean, always coffee, sometimes a vitamin water or just water. But
yeah,
great. Oh,
yeah.
Question.
Thank you.
Well,
for the last couple questions, we're going to shift completely away from music and go straight to death row.
Boom.
So if you're on death row, what would your last meal be with a drink?
Okay, my last meal on death row?
Yeah.
So like, I'm more vegan now, so I don't really have dairy. I'm more plant based.
I didn't fucking know that. What the hell? I'm vegan.
I know you are. Yeah.
But you haven't.
I thought we talked.
This has never come up.
I think it did in passing, but I didn't. I think you were like talking about how you just eat vegan junk food, though, uh-huh. is what you had said to me.
That might be. I don't know. This is I think this is news to me. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'm more plant based now. Yeah. So I was gonna say, it's a toss up between like some really good sushi, but like I probably have to give it up to my mom because she's her chicken parm is just like the best I've ever had. Mm-hmm. So that's what I would have: chicken parm and like a delicious Italian salad with that. That's just.
And what are you drinking with that?
God, I mean, I guess if I'm having like chicken parm, I'd probably just have some wine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I also don't really drink anymore. I'm so lame. Listen to me, but
I'm vegan. I don't drink.
I know. I mean, listen, this is like the stress of the music industry. I'm trying to set my baseline as healthy as possible.
Yeah, that's fair.
I mean, if I'm gonna have like a drink, I mean, nothing that I would have sounds appetizing with, chicken parm, but maybe some like a very nice glass of red wine then.
All right. Hell yeah.
And if you could live in one fictional world for a week, where would you live?
Okay, well, I'm a huge Lord of the Rings fan, so I'd have to do something with that.
Okay.
I guess that somewhere in Middle Earth. I mean, who doesn't like Hobbiton is like paradise, so probably. Yeah. Although I don't want to be a hobbit though. So maybe like one of like Rivendell or something, one of the elf worlds, because they're like beautiful and elegant and just so serene.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Somewhere in Tolkien's world, but like not Mordor. Or
yeah,
like
not the evil the Dark spots. Lord.
Yeah.
Mm-mm. Yeah. No.
Wait, okay. But I have to ask you guys, so like where would you live?
Frog and Toad.
Okay.
The magic school bus.
Yo,
you remember.
Yes.
I wasn't even thinking that wasn't that. Did you ever watch the solar system one?
I'm sure I did.
Yeah.
So I had the Magic School Bus computer game. I don't know. Nice. But this is like, I mean, this had to have been like 1996.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. You were not even a thought yet. No, like,
not even close.
Yeah. So, but like, man, that's a good answer.
Yeah. Someone gave that to me because I answered. It's my answer for a while was Diary of a Wimpy Kid. And they're like, can't you pick something cool like the Magic School Bus or something? And I'm like, you know what? That's a great fucking answer, and I'm using that
What was your other answer? I didn't hear the first one.
Diary of a Wimpy Kid.
Oh, yeah. I don't really know that. Yeah. I mean, I know the story. Oh.
It's basically just high school. Like
middle school.
Middle school. Sorry. It's been a while.
Not even high school, man. It's fucking arts.
Middle school was the best 3 years of my life, so.
that's fair.
So are you saying like when you see say a fantasy world, you're just saying like any fictional, it doesn't have to be like
it could be a real world, but you know it's fictional because the characters in it don't exist.
Yeah,
I will still stick with my Lord of the Rings answer. Okay.
Fair enough.
That's fair. Yeah.
And I have an honor of asking last question. Every single person that you've spoken to have said that is the most important question. What's your favorite color?
Blue.
Specific shade of blue.
Probably cerulean. I don't know.
All right. Based on all the red we've been surrounded by for the past 6 months, I would have said red, but.
No, red's rock and roll. Yeah. And red makes a statement. Gotcha. That's why I wanted that.
Okay. Gotcha. Blue. Gotcha. Oh, yeah.
Red and black is metal. Yeah. I wanted metal undertones because I wanted people to be like, okay. Because, like, if you dive in, this is the thing I love about music as well. It's all about context. I like a lot of metal and I like a lot of jazz heads. They like metal because it's just you take it in a different context. Mm-hmm. I like a lot of that stuff. So I like a lot of the sludge, like doom rock stuff. I love all that. So I wanted like a little bit of that vibe because I think it applies to the music, but in a very subtle way. Mm-hmm. Cause a lot of the riffs and stuff like that's, you know, that's again, I love Sabbath. So
yeah.
Oh, that's kind of the new music I'm writing is in a little bit more in that heavier sort of like deep purple Sabbath world.
All right. Yeah. Well, as I said, those are the questions we have today. Is there anything that you would like to plug?
I guess I should mention what I play, right? I don't know that I mentioned what I play. So for everyone out there, I play drums, guitar, piano, I sing, but drums and guitar and voice are my main instruments. I hop between those two and sing in my band and on my record. I played all the drums. I wrote a lot of the guitar parts. I played a lot of the leads, but also like I'll give some shout outs to everybody else who played. So I had Dan Haas on bass, Eric Rudick on guitar. Paul Ritchie was one of the producers, also played some guitar. Eric Romero was also one of the producers. I had Danny Clinch on harmonica. I had Roger Stevens from Blind Melon on guitar on Bed You Made, Clint Majan on sax on Give Us Another Chance. I'm just like, is that everybody? There's probably more, but
sure, there's more.
If you want to know, you can go on my Bandcamp or on my website or on my Instagram and find out all the specific credits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But streaming on Spotify is like, right, that's what we want.
Yeah. Yeah. Streaming on Spotify, yeah. Apple Music, whatever your choice of
exactly
of streaming services.
Yeah.
And Instagram is what I use the most. So yeah. Call me there.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Well, thank you for sounds. It's been Rachel Ann Dopkin, and we have been the Good Noise Podcast.